I'm Salem.
And I'm Salem's mom.
We read books and talk about them.
And today we'll be talking about
William Goldman's work of art, The Princess Bride.
Part one. We have just finished the first half of the book where they are heading into the fire swamp. And we're going to talk about it. So what do you think, Salem?
I really, really love it. It's like really well written. I'm just going to say it's amazing.
I agree. I have grown up watching the movie. I love it and know it so well that I can actually quote each and every line of the movie as I watch it.
And she basically watches it just for fun and shouts out all the lines of the movie.
But Salem's never seen the movie, and neither of us have read the book, so this is fun for us both to read the book together. And Salem's little sister has actually joined us in reading this at night aloud together.
We both want to give a shout out to Judy. I was having trouble coming up with an idea for what we should do when Judy decided to visit one of Mama's friends about, like, I'm 9 and so, like, she's about my grandparents' age, just to get an idea. So she recommended The Princess Bride, and we both agreed that it would be really good, me and Mama, because it's a classic, and we wanted to have a lot more variety. So we hope that a lot of you are familiar with the movie or the book.
Salem's little sister is 6 years old, almost 7, and she is really enjoying the book. So if your
child's exceptionally mature and they're around 6 or 7 years old, go ahead, my friend.
Are you calling your little sister exceptionally mature?
No! Definitely not!
I'm gonna tell her you said that. That's so nice. We might have her say a few words about what she thinks. Who are your favorite characters so far, Salem?
Well, I really like Wesley and Buttercup. Those are my two favorite characters.
Well, that's good, because they're the main characters.
Well, like Buttercup, it's kind of told from her perspective. It's not really, but like it's always is with Buttercup.
Mm-hmm.
Never like really with Wesley.
Yeah, unless it goes into the backstories of some of the other characters, which is cool because it's cool to see like some of these characters that I've known forever and loved so much. Have a little bit more depth to them in the book. The book goes into the backstories of Inigo Montoya and Fezzik.
I really like Inigo and Fezzik, too. Yeah. They're obviously amazing.
And it shows you just, you know, they have a lot more to them than what you might see from just meeting them in the first introduction in the book, which is when they are working for Vicini and plotting to kill Buttercup.
Yeah, that's kind of unfortunate. Otherwise, they'd be completely perfect characters. But I do want to say, fun fact, giantism is a real thing. So it's like a really rare condition where somebody multiplies in height and weight. That's like rapidly, like really unusually. Like, really fast. And it's actually a real thing. You can be over 7 feet tall when you're Mama's age.
Well, and Fezzik in the story is 6.5 feet tall by the time he's 11 years old. And I don't know any 6.5 foot tall 11-year-olds. Do you, Salem?
No!
So that you get to see how that was a huge burden to him growing up. And
because everybody, like, thought he was a bully. He was actually teased for being a bully. Like, the kids say, you're a bully, blah, 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 blah. And Fezzik, he was, like, really sad about it because he's not.
And he didn't want to fight, but he learned how to. And we'll leave you to read the book to find out more about how that happened. But what were some things about Inigo's backstory that you appreciated?
Well, I mean, like, I appreciate his reason for wanting revenge.
Mm-hmm.
So, Inigo, he's the son of a master
sword maker, right?
Sword maker, yeah.
Domingo Montoya.
And Domingo, who is the master sword maker, and Inigo's father, is absolutely amazing. And, like, for making swords for him is super easy. However, there's another master swordsmaker who is a lot more famous and popular, named Yeste. And Yeste and Domingo are surprisingly close friends. Now, Yeste has sometimes, every 2 years or so, has a sword that he himself cannot make.
Too challenging. Who does he go to?
He goes to Domingo. Mm-hmm. And
Domingo isn't well known. He's in a very small town, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it actually is tiny in its name.
And Yeste always ends up talking Domingo into making the sword for him, even though he doesn't want to because he says he wants a challenge, right?
Yeah, because, the swords Yeste presents him with to make are stupid in his mind.
Then, frivolous and for rich people.
Yeah. Then, one day,
A nobleman...
who I am pretty sure goes by the name of Count Rugen, though I don't know yet. Guys, I just want to tell you, book backs are such spoilers. If you ever look on the back of a paperback book, or in the little slot on a cover...
The inside of the front jacket.
Yeah.
Of a hardbound book. It gives away too much.
Yes! That's the way I learned that, Wesley isn't dead, which we'll get to later, and that Count Rugen is behind it all, and I have a suspicion that Count Rugen is the nobleman.
With how many fingers?
He has 6 fingers on his right hand.
Yeah. And so, side note, if you want to find out if you're going to like a book or not, read the first couple pages. Don't read the back or read the inside of the jacket. Unless you don't mind spoilers, because sometimes...
They give away way too much.
Publishers give away too much on those. It's just like trailers. It's like you watch a movie trailer nowadays and you're like, wow, I've seen the whole movie now. I don't even need to go see it. I just saw the condensed version. Back to the story. So
the six-fingered man
wants... Who's a nobleman. He has 6 fingers. He wants a sword made that he can... That will be... What, akin to Excalibur is what he says.
Yes, because...
But that's made for his hand with 6 fingers.
Because usually a good swordsman wouldn't mind if he had 6 fingers. He could easily put it in there anyway. It'd just be a little too tight and it'd kind of throw off his balance just a little bit. But he still could get really good. However, this...
A master swordsman... would notice a huge difference, right?
Yes. And so, because that nobleman wants to be the greatest swordsman on earth, he asked Domingo to make him the 6-fingered sword.
Mm-hmm. And now, Domingo is excited about it because it's like the first great challenge that he's come across in years.
Yeah, and we'll let you read the book to, see his monologue once he realizes that he's gonna make a 6-fingered sword.
Yeah.
Anyway.
He works on it for a year.
He goes between, I can't do it, and I've done it! I can't do it! I've done it! Yes. Every single few nights or so.
He basically goes kind of mad making this sword. And
then when he finally does it, he's calm, he's found peace in his heart.
Because he knows he's made a true work of art.
Yes. And then the nobleman comes by and says it's not good enough for him. And so he originally offered 500 pieces of gold for the sword to be made.
With a 1 gold coin down payment.
Well, actually, he was going to give Domingo more, but Domingo talks him into only giving him 1 coin because he said, You pay me money once the sword is made.
Mm-hmm.
Because he wasn't completely confident that he could actually do it. Anyway, so the nobleman comes by and says he's only going to pay 10 pieces of gold because he doesn't think it's a work of art. He thinks that it's not good enough for
him. It was a waste of his time, I think is what he says.
And then Domingo gives back him the gold coin down payment, and he says, "You have lost nothing. Go."
And he says he's going to give it to his son, Inigo. Well, the nobleman doesn't really like that attitude.
Warning, warning, warning. If your kids are listening to this podcast, take it away from them immediately.
What?
I'm going to give you 5 minutes.
Oh my gosh, no. It's totally fine. So in this...
No, it's not totally fine. Yes, because the nobleman rips with 2 thrashes of his sword, hits exactly in Domingo's heart, and it actually comes out of his body.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. So that's probably the most violent part in the book, at least so far. We're halfway through the book. There is some violence, but it focuses more on the suspense than it does on the gore or the violence
itself. So far,
itself.
Only 2 people have been killed.
Mm-hmm. So, and this was in the past, and it's kind of just giving you a backstory on Inigo.
Anyway, and so Inigo vows to be greater than the Six-Fingered Man so he can do a duel with the Six-Fingered Man to avenge his father.
And we'll let you read the book to figure out how Inigo becomes the best swordsman in the world.
Not the best, but he is, like, almost a wizard at swordsmanship.
Yeah, wizard level.
Yeah.
It's a real thing in the book, anyway. All right, so anyway, so that's cool to get some backstory on Inigo and Fezzik, and we already established we love Wesley and Buttercup.
I want to go into a little bit of Buttercup and Wesley's backstory. This is where the book starts. Buttercup is the daughter of...
2 farmers.
Yes, 2 farmers, and the farmers decided to hire a farm boy to do most of their work for him, and they treat him horribly. And guess what? His name is Wesley.
And how does Buttercup treat Wesley?
She just calls him Farm Boy. She doesn't even acknowledge his name.
And she barks orders at him all the time, right?
Yeah.
It makes him.
And he always
polish her horse's saddle. That's all she cares about, right? Is her horse and riding.
Yeah, but she has hundreds of suitors, even though her parents are not that rich, because she is the most beautiful woman on earth.
Mm-hmm. At one point in the story, towards the beginning, they are visited by the Count and the Countess.
For reasons that you will have to read the book for. Anyway, the Countess spends time with Wesley because she wants to find out something. Again, read the book.
And the Count spends time with Buttercup, or at least watches her.
And then Buttercup realizes the reason why she is so angry with the Countess, with Wesley, is because she loves Wesley.
Mm-hmm.
So the night following, once the Count and Countess leave, she goes to Wesley and tells him that she will do anything he asks because she loves him. And then Wesley, the next morning, says goodbye.
And he's leaving to go seek wealth in America. And
so that he can buy a house for him and Buttercup, because he loves Buttercup more than Buttercup loves him.
Yes, so he's going to go out into the world and make something of himself so that he can marry her and provide a life for her. But while he's on his ship to America,
he supposedly dies because there are pirates who attack the ships he's sailing on.
Not just any pirates. The dread Pirate Roberts, who apparently takes no survivors.
So everybody thinks that he is dead.
And Buttercup mourns and
she decides that she can never love again.
Yep. Meanwhile, the king of Florin, where they live, is dying, and
his son, Prince Humperdinck, has a zoo death, blah, 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 blah.
He only cares about hunting, and he's very good at it, and he realizes that he's going to have to marry soon, because his father's dying, and he has to have an heir to the throne.
So, he decides he wants to marry a princess from a nearby land, and I forget the name of it.
Gildor.
Gildor.
It's their neighboring country.
Anyway, the princess of Gildor turns out to be bald, and he doesn't want a bald wife.
And it's a big fiasco that's not actually in the movie at all, so it's pretty cool to read about in the book. He tells the Count, who's kind of his right-hand man and confidant, that he doesn't care if who he marries is common or not. He just wants to marry someone beautiful.
So that when other people are visiting, they'll say, "My, my, what a beautiful woman. That prince is amazing." Basically, he wants people to think he's amazing.
Mm-hmm, because he thinks he's amazing.
Yeah.
The Count says he already knows just the right girl.
It's Buttercup. And so Buttercup applies to be a princess, basically, and she spends...
Three years training
to
be a princess.
Exactly.
They make her the princess of Hammersmith or something, some place in their kingdom.
And so, finally... Prince Humperdinck decides that she's good enough to marry him. And so they're just about to get married, and he announces his bride-to-be, and she decides that she wants to go through the crowd and have everybody touch her.
So she does, and everyone loves her, right?
Because she's the most beautiful woman on earth.
She's with them, and, you know, the common people, and they like that.
And there are only three people who want to murder her.
So then she decides to go for a little ride on her horse, which she still loves to do. And she gets kidnapped by...
the three people who want to murder her.
Inigo, Fezzik, and Vicini, the Sicilian.
Who want to kill her. Well, Vicini wants to kill her. Fezzik and Inigo just do his bidding.
Yes, this is true. The Sicilian Vicini is the mastermind behind the whole operation, and we learn that they've been hired by somebody to kill Princess Buttercup on the land of Gildor to start a war between Florin and Gildor. So they sail away towards the Cliffs of Insanity. What did you think of the Cliffs of Insanity, Salem? Do you remember how tall they were? 1,000 feet tall.
Wow. I forgot.
And how do they get up the Cliffs of Insanity?
Basically, there was already a rope tied there because they had planned ahead. And they sail on a boat to the Cliffs of Insanity because they're like a steep 1,000 feet. Basically a wall blocking a giant lake from the rest of Gildor. And the lake just happens to be shark infested. So while Buttercup is swimming trying to escape, they find her. And soon... they quickly realize that there's somebody following them.
And Inigo thinks there's someone following them. He notices.
And then the Sicilian says, "Inconceivable! It's just a fisherman fishing after dark." And then Fezzik says, "Yeah," because he, like, is convinced that the Sicilian is always right. "Yes, it is just a fisherman fishing at night in shark-infested waters."
Fezzik, with his strength, climbs them up the cliffs.
On a rope.
The man in black, who's following them, climbs up the rope, and when he's still 300 feet from the top...
They cut the rope. And then he grabs a hold of the cliff and has a special climbing technique.
And he climbs up the cliff. Well, the Sicilian takes Buttercup and Fezzik and runs off and orders Inigo to kill the man in black if he reaches the top.
They have a great, wonderful, like, glorious battle.
Duel. Fencing duel. Because Inigo's a wizard fencer.
Yes.
And we quickly realize that the man in black is also a wizard fencer as well.
They both start out left-handed. And they both think that the other one is left-handed with their swords because they want to get better at using their left hand. And so...
and because they're so good that they need more of a challenge, so they use their weaker arm to start, right?
Yeah. They have a great duel, and then just when the man in black is about to kill... just when the man in black is about to kill Inigo... he is just a foot away from the cliffs. And then he says, I'm not left-handed. And then he switches hands to his right hand and quickly, like, goes. And they have a great and glorious battle. And then eventually, when the man in black is forced to the edge of the cliff, he says, I am not left-handed either. And they basically have a great duel, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, the man in black wins.
But he doesn't kill Inigo because he respects him so much as a swordsman. He knocks him out. Then he goes after Fezzik. Fezzik is told by Vicini to crush his head with a rock. And he says that's not very sportsmanlike. So Vicini takes off with Buttercup, and instead of crushing his head with a rock, he throws a rock very close to his head to give him kind of a warning.
And so they have a great battle. Again, the man in black wins, and he is a regular-sized man, not a giant like Fezzik.
And he doesn't kill Fezzik either, right?
Yeah.
He knocks him out.
And
he goes after
the Sicilian.
Vicini, who has Buttercup tied hands and feet, and she's blindfolded.
And he has a knife very close to her throat, and he has a picnic spread set up.
With two glasses of wine.
And a wine bottle.
They agree to have a battle of wits because the Sicilian thinks he is the smartest man alive.
The man in black demands that he pours the bottle of wine. Then he takes and pours
iocane powder, which is
the deadliest poison to man. And is odorless. Doesn't smell at all. Yeah.
So the man in black pours it into one of the wine goblets, and the battle of wits is that Vicini has to choose which wine to drink, and the man in black will drink the other one.
Just when you think that the man in black's cup is the one that's poisoned, Vicini decides to choose that one, and he ends up dead. And then Buttercup says, and all that time, the one in front of you was poisoned. Because he's rescued her, basically. And the man in black says, no, they were both poisoned. I spent 2 years in Australia building up a resistance to iocane powder.
So he's pretty awesome.
Yeah. And then we figure out, and then he's Willoughby, and they're
Willoughby.
Stuck.
You mean Wesley?
Wesley!
This is a Princess Bride, Princess Bride Jane Austen crossover with Willoughby and Buttercup. Alright, so anyway, okay. So they take off, and he's very upset, keeps talking to Buttercup about Prince Humperdinck and her getting married, and how she must love him, and she says she doesn't love him, she doesn't understand why she's being interrogated by this guy about it.
La 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 la. Anyway, then, so eventually she pushes him into a ravine, and he somehow survives the fall, and she figures out he's Wesley.
How does she figure it out? Do you remember?
Because
he says, you can die too for all I care. And what does he say? As you wish.
As you wish.
Which is what he said to her when?
Whenever she'd give him orders as a farm boy.
Yep. So she realizes it's Wesley.
And then she jumps into the ravine, and I quote, she wouldn't care if it was like a five... If she wouldn't care if it was a 1,000 feet drop, she'd go anywhere if it was for Wesley.
So they're reunited, which ironically we don't get to read about in the book. The funny thing about William Goldman is that he likes to have a lot of different inserts and footnotes in this book to interrupt the story and talk about why he cut out certain parts of the original,
blah, blah.
Or what's
and so,
going on.
I can't really tell if that's still true or not.
Yeah, because the whole intro to The Princess Bride is that William Goldman wanted to buy this book for his son for his 10th birthday that he read his father read to him growing up when he was 10. And it was his favorite book of all time. It changed his life from being this, like, sports head who didn't care about books to wanting to become an author. Well, he realizes when his son can't get through the first chapter, William Goldman realizes that his father growing up had only read him the good parts of the book, that he cut out all of the boring political, historical stuff out of the book, and so he decides to write this abridged version. So it's a very, kind of stuck wondering, like, is this real or not? Like, did this really happen? Is there really an old...
However, if it's not real, I'm pretty sure that William Goldman just made it so that you can't see the reunion scene because he couldn't write it. He actually makes this really big excuse.
We'll have to come back at the end of the book when we finish in part two and say for sure whether or not that whole side of this perspective was real.
They're heading into the fire swamp, which, if you do not know, is a swamp, and I can't tell if this is real or not either. It's basically a swamp, except there are flaming clouds of flaming gas erupting everywhere, so giant flames coming out of the swamp. And also, there's snowflake sand.
Snow sand, yeah. All in all, this snow sand is way worse and scarier than quicksand.
Yeah.
And there's one more thing, the ROUS, which they haven't really gone into detail about, have they?
No.
Okay, they're still building the suspense of that.
Yes.
Meanwhile, Prince Humperdinck has been hunting and tracking them the entire time, and he's very smart and quick and fast, and he's going to meet them at the other side of the fire swamp if they make it through. So, Salem, would you recommend this book so far?
Absolutely. It's amazing. William Goldman is an amazing author. And
we're only halfway through.
Yeah.
I have to say that when we were reading about Inigo's backstory, Salem was falling asleep, and I said, okay, we can read more, you know, we'll finish the rest tomorrow, and she said, no, he squeezed rocks for 10 years, and he practiced
ajuda, and she said, said that part was top secret, you have to read the book.
Okay, she
out.
Said, I'm listening to every word, keep going, and I was like, okay, and so I started reading some more, I wasn't two paragraphs in before she started snoring.
Wait, really?
Yes, and I said, okay, we'll read more tomorrow, and I gave her a kiss, and she sat up with her eyes closed and said, no, I have to know what happens. So I think she likes it.
I definitely like it. I just want to say, I would like to say some stuff about how amazing this book is.
Go ahead.
First of all, I think this book is amazing because it is very well written, and as Mama said, it relies on suspense. I really like all the main characters, except for the Sicilian, who is dead now. And so we don't really care about him. No, not at all. But I really do like Inigo, the giant, I forget his name. Sorry, I'm bad with names, especially in books. And Wesley and Buttercup. And now, my sister, with a few comments about The Princess Bride.
Hi.
So what do you think so far of The Princess Bride?
Well, it's really good, and I like how you make their voices.
Aw, thanks.
Yeah, and I like the characters, too. And you left us on a very good cliffhanger.
Yeah, who's your favorite character so far?
Wesley! That's me.
I don't know.
Or one of your favorite parts, can you tell us that?
When we realized that the man in black was actually Wesley.
I already knew that because
she read the back of the jacket and it basically says that on there.
It says, jumping into all the adventure and spoiling the Sicilian, the giants, blah, 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 plots is Wesley. And so it's just like, Wesley's the man in black!
So there's another reason not to spoil books for yourself by reading the back of the
also,
cover.
When I was really little, and for some reason, I always remember movie clips, just movie clips that I watch when I'm little. And so when I was really little, like 4 years old, somebody was playing The Princess Bride, and I can't remember where this was, and then I saw the Man in Black and the Sicilian, and they were like, deciding which cup.
Oh, okay.
So that's how I suspected that both cups were poisoned.
All right.
I at least knew that the Sicilian would die.
So that was your favorite part, Ellie, so far?
So yes. I had spoilers.
I have more favorite parts, too. Like, when Wesley does stuff like the Man in Black, the part that you just read to us last night, it was really cool.
And which part was that?
The fire swamp.
They're going into the fire swamp, right?
Yeah. Well, they might not go inside of the fire swamp.
They might not?
Yeah, what if they just hide behind a tree?
Well, that's a good idea, but then they would just hide there forever? Isn't Prince Humperdinck right behind them? On their trail?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I think
that's
they're going to go in the fire
hanger. Thanks a lot, Mama.
You're welcome. Don't thank me, thank William Goldman.
William Goldman is too amazing to put cliffhangers in his book. Mom's the one who makes the cliffhangers.
Yep. So you'll have to listen next time for part two when we finish The Princess Bride.
Which is also going to exclusively include my little sister. But she's going to be with us for a longer period of time, I'm guessing.
Yes. You have to.
I don't have to do anything.
Oh, sisters. Thanks for listening.
Yep. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Check out Maggie Bays.